Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back to 2011 and look at the World Cup with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective podcast. Today is the most sumptuous rugby in all of rugby. It's the Canada against the France. What I was doing there was an impression of the cheapest wine advert of all time, which was ironically for a really expensive wine that they're advertising during this World Cup. And I've now seen this advert a few times. And it's honestly, I could have put that wine advert together in about 10 minutes, maybe 15. If they told me the font they wanted, I could have made it in moments.
So just to clarify, on this wine advert, they were saying, "Welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective."
Yes.
And that's where we got the name of this podcast from.
I was going to say, I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up because our lawyers may be in touch.
Sure.
Because we did steal it directly from a wine advert from 2011.
Yeah, we have so many lawyers on this podcast as well. Like, we always have them just sat constant in the back of the room.
Constant, yeah. That's all of our guests today.
Yeah,
We have, as well as joining myself, Robbie Squidge, whoever you want to call me, and
Will Owen. Yeah.
Yeah. As well, we also have 18 lawyers.
Yeah.
And Carly Rae Jepsen joining
us
today.
Yes, as promised.
We promised this on Canada's last game.
Well,
that we would have Carly Rae Jepsen join us.
In fact, we promised we'd have another guest who isn't Carly Rae Jepsen. But really, we're just throwing everyone off when we said that.
We do. It's the lawyers.
Yeah,
we've
got
the lawyers here.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We've got the 18 lawyers. Yeah. They've been off having like a game of touch, which is officially legal by now, according to the RFU. They were going to have a full contact game, but they didn't have anyone to play against. So it was 15 on
other
three.
Other than Carly Rae.
So, Carly Rae's part of the podcast. She's here.
Yeah, I know. She's occupied.
I feel we haven't given a big enough introduction as possibly the greatest pop music writer of her generation, an absolute icon, and the writer of endless bangers, as well as the performer of endless bangers. As I say, genuinely an icon and a hero of Canada. Carly Rae Jepsen, who told me that she knows nothing about rugby, so doesn't really want to talk about things she doesn't know much about. But she's here. She's in the call. I can see her. She's smiling very broadly.
Yeah,
right
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. And I asked if she'd come on the podcast, and she said, "Well, I can't get there in time." And I said, "That's okay. Call me, maybe."
I just hate you. I really, really, really hate you. I don't want to do this podcast anymore.
Okay.
I want to. It's like you're the feeling. I'm going to cut you.
Should we just put this out as a 3-minute episode?
Yeah, we're done. We don't even mention the game.
No.
We just go. God,
we talk about
I can't stand that.
Wine, which is French, and Carly Rae Jepsen, which is Canadian. So, which of those two would win in a rugby match?
Hey, we're not very dedicated, which was the name
Shut
of the
up.
Most recent album.
Which of those two would win in a rugby match?
What, Carly Rae Jepsen or
wine?
Or wine. Wine.
You reckon?
Because wine. If Carly Rae Jepsen drank it, she'd lose some level of coordination, depending on how much wine there is, I guess. And how many Carly Rae Jepsens as well. If we've got 18 Carly Rae Jepsens and 18 lawyers, who would win? Carly Rae Jepsen.
If one of the lawyers was Alwyn Jones,
I'd back
then she's a bit screwed.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Though he hasn't passed the bar, so does he count? He's just got a law. He's got a master's in law.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he qualifies as a lawyer.
Okay.
You made it like an 18, not 15, because there's 18 players.
What we need, right? What we need is the other seven. We need the other 17 lawyers to try and work out and decide legally whether Alwyn Jones is a lawyer. One of those lawyers is Conrad Smith as well,
of course.
And there's someone, Eliot Thomas-Apollo, is a qualified lawyer.
Is he?
Jesus
Christ,
which is dangerous.
His clients.
Yeah, I know. I know, can you imagine? Can you imagine rocking up in court with him like a couple of days after he said the thing about a referee being racist?
Yeah.
Imagine how he treats judges.
Oh, he must hate them. And they must hate him, yeah, to be fair. But
yeah, absolutely.
My God. I mean, I reckon he's probably pretty convincing, is the thing, at his job. So,
oh yeah, no, because he's good at articulating himself. Yeah. He's a bright enough guy, and he clearly knows the law. You've seen him, you know, talk about he's the kind of guy who, when he gets into something, he will learn it inside out.
Yeah,
he becomes
passionate about
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
My God, I imagine he's a prosecutor.
Yeah, you'd imagine.
Yeah.
Or no, because he's always in the corner of the little guy, isn't he? You know, he's a big fan of just like. If he sees everyone, you know, if he sees the entire rest of the Samoan squad beating one lad up, he goes and defends that one lad.
True, true. But
he's the kind of, I think a large part of it is just because he likes being contrary.
Yeah.
But
that's fair. Do you think that's it, when he's just decided to take a career as a prosecutor just so he could disagree with everyone else in the room?
Do you think he just takes whichever side of the case is wrong?
Yeah, I think so.
So if the client's guilty, he takes, he becomes suddenly the defense attorney.
Yeah, and he's got 0% record, and every time, you know, he shakes the client's hand at the end and goes, well, I really thought we had it for you.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a good, clean game. Really, if the judge wasn't so racist, we'd have been fine. Yeah. Anyway, France against Canada. France against Canada in the 2011 Rugby World Cup. Game finished 46-19, but I don't think that's a fair reflection of Canada. Yeah?
It finished 46-19?
46-19, yeah. Basically, though, the way the game goes is it was really competitive, both halves, for 35 minutes. And then right before half-time in the first half, Canada gave away 4 penalties in as many minutes, and France kicked 3 of them.
Yeah.
And in the second half, they then gave away 3 tries. One try was on about 60-odd minutes.
Yeah.
And then they gave away 2 tries in the last 2 minutes.
In fact, I think it was later than that. I think it was about 70 minutes, and the last 2 were literally the 79th and 80th minute. But, like, at the end of the last episode, you described
tries on 65.
You described this game as being bullshit. And I totally agree with that. Like, it's completely different to quite how I remember it. Because I remember it for the fact that 4 minutes into the game, France scored the world's worst try via Vincent Clerc. And then 3 minutes later, Canada scored the exact same try.
So this is the interest. So just talk about the first Vincent Clerc try for a bit. Basically, what happens is France get into the Canadian, or just outside the Canadian 22, and they punch away for a few phases. And then François-Antoine Duke at 10 hangs a high ball completely pointlessly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's raining. It's not a nice night to be a fullback. But he hangs this really pointless-looking high ball that isn't really near the line. Like, even if Claire had taken it on the fall, had regathered it, he wasn't scoring.
And for the record, you say it's a pointless kick. Can we also just digress? It's a dreadful kick as well.
Yes.
It goes about 5 metres forward and 10 metres to the right-hand side. Like, it's a rubbish kick.
It's a bad option, and it's executed badly.
Yeah.
However, there's this sort of fumble as, like, 2 Canadians and one of the French players go up for the ball.
Yeah.
And all of them just kind of take each other out, and the ball just lands in Vincent Clerc's hands, who dives over from 2 yards out.
Something like that.
Next to the posts. Yeah, he just kind of, the ball lands in his hands, and he goes, oh, thank you. You know, it's like the end of Hamlet, you know, everyone takes each other out, and then Vincent Clerc turns up and is king.
Sure, yeah. And then, 3 minutes in. We are only 7 minutes into this game. And then Ander Monroe just kind of...
No. So you've skipped something. Okay. So Canada kick long from the restart, right? Having gone 7-0 down. And François-Antoine Duke takes the ball in his own 22 and goes, well, this worked well for me at the other end, and hangs an almost identical kick from his own 22, which goes absolutely nowhere. It's an even worse kick than the last one. And it's regathered by Canada,
of course,
who work a few phases, and then Ander Monroe goes, well, they got mixed results out of this
one.
What else is
there to do?
I've just seen this can go one of 2 directions. So he does exactly the same thing and just hangs this completely pointless high ball.
Yeah. And then it looks like Damien try lifts DTH, like it's a line-out. And there's basically 3 players. There's 2 French and 1 Canadian, again, all just get completely muddled, jump for the ball in completely different directions and can't quite tell where it goes. And it just kind of bounces and lands on the try line. And Ryan Smith, the Canadian inside centre, then just kind of drops it and goes, oh, did I score?
Yeah, because about 4 Canadian players go for it. And they're like, the ball's over the line. Everyone diving everywhere. And then everyone keeps missing it, and Smith just walks over and picks it up and dots it down. In this, like, again, like the end of Hamlet, him just walking in and being like, oh, this is chaos. I'm just gonna score a try here.
Yeah, yeah.
Just really casually.
Monroe's kick was considerably better than Tranduke's, safe to say.
Mm.
Because there was actually a degree of, this will maybe put the fullback under pressure. But my God, like, how did nobody take that kick? How did that result in a try?
That's at least the first one. I don't know if the wind catches it or something.
No idea.
But it isn't the kick anyone's expecting. No. Like, it lands a different place. It's a bit like the Will Tupu try.
Yeah,
kick in the World Cup. Yeah, for Golinitsky. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. So Helu misjudges it because he's expecting a better kick.
Yeah.
This is the opening try in the World Cup last year.
Yeah.
It's Golinitsky finishes. Artemyev puts in a rubbish kick. And if he put in a good kick, Tupu would have covered it entirely fine. But instead, it's a bad kick, so he has to readjust. And I think there's an element of that to the first try by France.
Yeah.
Because they kind of go, you have the two Canadians in the backfield kind of go,
yeah, they're expecting a better kick.
What? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Because, you know, it's a nominally, you know, Flyoff is putting some world-class performance in the Six Nations.
Sure.
And it, now his jersey's under pressure, as Martin Gilliam on commentary keeps telling us.
Yeah, yeah.
They're under pressure to put Morgan Parra in at 10, which would be a stupid idea if they did it.
My God, I don't think it would stick.
No. No, you know, no one, not even France, are that daft to do it next game against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Never mind in the World Cup final.
Nope.
When he's played one game there at professional rugby previously.
It's fine, though, because they've called in some backup to play in the halfbacks as well, in Jean-Marc Doucin. Mm. And, you know, we'll see what happens to him throughout this tournament. They've got plenty of time to blood him in. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, yeah.
We'll worry about him later.
Look, it's not like he's going to make his first cap in the World Cup.
No, they've got plenty of games to
That's
now
not.
Then. That's fine.
That's not
they've
happening.
They've got loads
That's
of
fine.
Time.
It's worth touching on the teams.
Sure.
Because this is... It's even worse than that. This is a really strong French team.
Yeah. They've not got Doucetoir. Which explains them going to pot. But otherwise...
So, all the players that aren't playing from the first team are players where they've got a really solid international standard replacement.
Yeah.
So you have... Reddy Mougery moves from 13 to the wing.
Yeah, he's captain.
Meaning Maxime Maillard drops to the bench. Yeah. Yes. You then have David Marty and Maxime Moz come in the centre. And I've forgotten how good David Marty
was. Yeah, he was pretty good, wasn't he? He was balanced.
He was a great player. Yeah.
And
and he makes his one little break.
He worked well with
Moz
as well. Obviously, yes. Both Perpignan together.
Yeah, exactly. So they make sense as a partnership to come
absolutely.
In. Yeah, and far more sense than Andre Esterhazy, who they had in. Not Andre Esterhazy.
They had Andre Esterhazy.
Fabrice
Estebanez.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's a very good
Andre Esterhazy, yeah.
They're both big. They're similar built lads with names beginning in Est.
Sure.
Anyway, so, yeah. They bring in Mamoz Marty. And in the back row, they bring in Fufu Odrago, who is a very good player for Doucetoir.
Yeah.
And you've got to rest Doucetoir somewhere, because at some point, he might tire, because apparently it's possible.
Can we just quickly talk about the fact they had Roman Milishluski starting in the second row for them?
Yeah, I didn't notice that until I was looking at the lineups now. When I was watching the game, I didn't notice him.
And
no, Milishluski was playing.
I don't remember really him doing anything for France at any point, other than just be a fat lad.
Like, I knew he played for France, but I don't remember anything he did in any of those games.
Me neither.
This was his last cap for France.
Wow.
France.
Okay.
Okay. So he played against Ireland in the Six Nations in a World Cup warm-up that year.
Right.
He played against Australia and Fiji the previous autumn.
Right.
And basically, he'd come in and play, like, two games a year. No, he won most of the caps in 2009. Okay. He played consistently in 2009, and then 2010, 2011, 2008... Right, he won his first cap in 2005.
Right.
He then didn't play again until 2008, so 3 year absence. Then was consistently in the team through the autumn of 2008 through to the end of 2009.
Right.
Then fell out the team completely, won a handful of caps off the bench between there and the World Cup, where he goes and plays one game against Canada, where he's a bit shit.
Yeah, just anonymous, isn't he?
Yeah.
And, of course, when you've got Milishluski being anonymous in the second row, doing the old Ben McCarman role,
yes.
It's a good thing that he has a nice, disciplined second row alongside him in Pascal Pape to balance it out.
When was the last time France had a genuinely disciplined second row?
Oh, they haven't. They just haven't.
No.
They've had, like, Félix Lombé is a singular decent...
Yeah, he's Irish.
Yeah, he's definitely Irish.
But even then, when I went to see Lyon play Leinster in the RDS earlier this year, that was January.
It?
I know, I went to an actual rugby match with a crowd. And yeah, he gives away the most cynical, dickheadish yellow card in that game. And it's like, oh, I thought he was like the one French forward who isn't a dickhead. But here we are.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I just don't think they ever will have a combination of second rows who are both disciplined.
Speaking of the rare French forwards who aren't dickheads,
mm-hmm.
Guillaume Garrido's on the bench.
Yes, he is. And he has hair.
I had absolutely no recollection he played for France this early.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, he was like third choice hooker, and he was pretty good at club level at this point. Never thought he would go on to become a captain or anything at this point.
It turns out he'd been playing for France since 2008, and I had no idea. I remember him coming in.
I thought it was like 2010.
So he then doesn't play. He comes off the bench in this game. He doesn't play again for France until 2013.
Right.
And that's when I remember him kind of appearing, you know, being like, oh, he's good. You know, this lad they bring off the bench, and then him getting into the first team. I think he's good, you know. And then when he became captain, be like, oh, he's brilliant. He's incredible.
No,
he's sort of slow rise.
Like, he had hair at this point, you know. Spring chicken. Strange look at that. But yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's just, you know, good to see him. And good to see him in a French team that won some games.
Yeah, absolutely.
I bet at the time he was really frustrated by this performance.
Oh, we would have been.
Not realising this is as good as it gets, mate.
Yeah. Should we look at the Canadian team as well?
Yes.
So
this is pretty much their first 15.
Yeah, it's not too dissimilar from the one that played against Tonga. I'm not sure they've made any changes whatsoever, to be honest. They kept the back row of Kleiberger, O'Toole and Carpenter, who were brilliant, against the Tongans. Of course, coming up against the Wydrago, Bonaire, Picamon back row, which is a hell of a task. But again, they dealt with them very well, I thought.
Yeah.
And the pack as a whole dealt well with them. DTH van der Merwe staying in the centre as well, with Hearn and McKenzie on the wings.
Yeah.
Pritchard as well. Wasn't an easy day for him, but I think he generally did pretty well.
I thought he did really well. I thought it was pretty outstanding. For, again, there's a couple of mistakes, but when you're in the rain, in the dark, under a huge amount of pressure by people far bigger than you, you're going to drop two or three high balls. Yeah. And that was all he dropped, you know. One was for the try, admittedly.
Yeah.
But
Damien Trimade made the same error,
I thought he was very good and very assured. Yet there's something about James Pritchard's face and body language that I feel he has this kind of like workman's energy about him, of someone who's just committed to what he does, and that's being a fullback.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said before, they're my favourite kind of players, like workman-like fullbacks who just kind of are really bog standard, do the job, and would never. Maybe they got played on the wing once or twice, but they'd never dream of playing in another position given the choice. Yeah. They're my favourite kind of player.
He has played on the wing. I have a feeling he's played a bit of 10, you know.
I think he has.
Yeah. But he very much is a fullback, just in terms of the way he's very solid. Yeah. Sorry.
We're talking about the Canadian team. Do you want some real insight into how the Canadian team were going to play in this game?
Go on. Is this coming from Carly Rae? She told you this.
No. This comes from someone else who's very much lived the Hollywood lifestyle, by which I mean they like cocaine. It's Lawrence Dallaglio.
Oh, okay.
So this is a clip of Lawrence Dallaglio talking before the game. This is his insight into the Canadian team.
They're renowned for having, you know, some wonderful, you know, back play, but it doesn't really look, does it, like the weather for the backs today. And similar to England, this Canadian team will, you know, similar to Georgia, the Canadian team are strong up front, and, you know, the French forwards must really get on top of this game if they're to come out. That's because having played Canada a few times, you know, they've got that ice hockey background, and, you know, most of their players would have been brought up, you know, playing ice hockey, and they'll be physical and they'll be up for it. And I think that's what the French can bring to it, the physical.
I mean, even before the ice hockey thing, I spent that entire thing wincing at him going, they've got forwards, I guess, and behind them they might have some backs maybe or something like that. And then he brings up the ice hockey thing. It's like, no. They're not going to bring pucks onto the pitch. They're not going to bring, you know, sticks to beat them with.
I genuinely couldn't believe he said that. Like, it's genuine xenophobia. It's what do I know about Canada? They like ice hockey. Great. I'm surprised they didn't go, well, the front row of the size they are because they drank so much maple syrup.
Yeah. Genuinely.
Like, it's astounding levels of just lack of insight into this team. And also just revealing xenophobia.
The fact that, if anything, the Canadian stereotype is that they're generally very nice people.
Yes.
And yet he's gone down the other route of, oh, they play ice hockey and that's quite a physical game, so therefore they must be horrible. And I guess Jamie Cullen is from there. And he's quite physical. And
I mean, I suppose it makes sense, though, considering in this World Cup, Romania's best player is their hooker, and that does represent what Lawrence Dallaglio knows about their people.
Mm.
In, you know, allegedly, the thousands of dollars he spent in a Romanian establishment in the UK.
Of course.
But, it's astounding.
Yeah, no.
And also, how many of these players do have an... I don't think any of them do have an ice hockey background.
I'd be surprised if
from what I know.
I reckon Jeb Sinclair might have played ice hockey. That's just a guess. Sure. I haven't got anything to base that off. I just reckon he looks like the sort of player who might have at some point played ice hockey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just going through the team, for certain, Dietrich van der Merwe grew up in South Africa.
Yeah.
And moved to Canada as a teenager.
Yeah.
So we'll have no ice hockey background. Who else is in there? Ed Fairhurst, I know, doesn't. I know he was like, there's a few players in there who very much talk about.
I could see being... Ander Monroe as an ice hockey player.
I can see that.
Maybe Pat Reardon.
Okay. The only player I'm seeing from a very brief research, which frankly is more than Lawrence Dallio did, is Brett Beckerboom played hockey as a teenager and then transitioned into rugby.
Oh, that's quite cool. But
it's taken us like a really unusual path, even in Canada.
Yeah.
That, having had a quick look at the story.
The sports have nothing in common.
I know! That's the other thing. Like, there's no lineup other than the fact that occasionally you hit people.
Yeah, that's basically.
They're not territorial. Have you ever watched ice hockey? Like, I've been to watch Panthers a few times, having grown up in
I've not done that. Yeah, yeah. I've watched highlights of ice hockey on Premier Sports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's one of the three things I
exactly.
have. It's that of Spanish football. Yeah. 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 Having been to watch ice hockey a few times, it's the sport it's most like is basketball.
Right.
In that it's this very back and forward, but it's basketball without the actual scoring.
Right, okay.
In that it's constant chances, but no one actually scores.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, because they always have massive lads, just units in the way of the goal, so you just can't get in the way. And they always just drop and do the splits, so you can't score, don't they?
I became convinced that the Panthers goalie was a large Scottish woman called Keza. I don't know why I came up with that.
No.
But even when the player I referred to as Keza left Panthers, I would still refer to any ice hockey goalie as Keza.
That's fair enough.
It was a joke I made when I was like 14.
Glad it's
and
stopped.
Now I don't stand by it. I don't think it's a good joke, but I'm saying it out loud now.
Oh well. Everyone else can make that joke now.
If only Keza had signed to play in the front row.
Yeah, I know. I think, is Keza on the bench for Canada in this game? No, Keza.
No, not by the looks of it, is there?
No.
No. But yeah, again, good Canada team who are not good because of their ice hockey background.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think is really interesting about this Canada team, as I say, they were really competitive and really in it and really took it to France for 35 minutes of each half. And if you took out those handful of minutes, at 35 minutes on in the first half, it was 10-all.
Yeah.
And then Canada gave away 3 penalties that France kick. And again, it was the second half was again quite close. You know, you just had the Damien try to separate them.
With those penalties as well, even when they were still not, I don't want to say in the game, because they always were in the game, but even when they were locking at 10-all, and when they were briefly ahead 10-7, of course, the penalties that Canada were giving away were all so preventable as well. Like, it's so frustrating to look at that, because often you look at a Tier 2 team and think, you know, they've done all they can. Which Canada, for the most part, did. But there was a lot of penalties that they just could have gotten away with not doing, like not rolling away. Like this. Yeah.
I would take your point, had it not been that quite a few of those penalties were given away by Jamie Cudmore.
Okay, that's fair enough. Okay. I sit
corrected. Like, there was a point in which I was getting quite frustrated with the fact that Canada just kept giving away these really bad penalties.
Yeah, because they were.
Like,
they
in
were.
A row.
Yeah,
and it was they were consecutive. Yeah. Like, they'd get into this habit of just giving penalty. And then they'd get out of the habit and they'd continue and they'd get back into the game.
Yeah.
And I was really frustrated by this. And then they cut to Jamie Cudmore as the guy that just gave it away and went, oh, that makes sense now. You know, that's fine. That's,
he's got who he is. His quota, hasn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. He hasn't got a card in this World Cup so far. Yeah. So, you know, he should really step up.
Yeah.
But the other thing I think is really interesting about Canada is their coach at the time is Kieran Crowley.
Of course.
Who has since gone on to be fantastic for Benetton Treviso and subsequently Benetton.
Yeah.
And he's done such a good job, got them into the top 4 of the Pro 14. Made them into a real genuine force as like a good team that deserved to be in the top tier European competition and are, you know, in the top half teams, certainly.
Yeah.
If not top 4 team, consistently in the Pro 14. And is a very good and very smart coach. And he kind of fits into that Eddie Jones mould. He's not Eddie Jones, obviously, but of coaches who will change their team depending on the personnel.
Yeah.
And coaches who look at, right, what have I got? Okay, this is how I'm going to make it work. So his Benetton team plays incredibly different to his Canadian team, who played very differently in 2015 to this team.
I think, looking at this, I will very strongly disagree with the point Lawrence Dallier was making about the Canadians, because I don't think they do have the biggest pack, especially when you compare it to the French. I think they have a mobile pack, who you don't look at that front five and think set piece, do you? You don't think scrum, certainly. No. You think they'll bruise you around the park, they're pretty athletic and they can all handle the ball pretty well, actually. And they're all pretty good on the floor. So
if you were to look at that team, right, it's the forward pack is eight players whose best attribute is their work rate.
Yeah.
Or seven and Jamie Cudmore, who's his aggression, you know, which kind of fits into the same mould, you know? Yeah, being angry kind of fits in with being really driven and working yourself around. And so the way Canada played was built around that. And the thing I thought was really interesting about their game is how modern their kicking strategy was.
Yeah.
Their attack wasn't, or nothing else was, but they kicked like a 2019 World Cup team.
In terms of kicking for territory, yes. There were a few times when Ander Munro suddenly played like he was in the 80s, but we'll get onto that.
But
I think even before that, their forward sort of phase shapes, I think, were very modern.
Yeah.
The way that they sort of split their forwards around the park. Obviously, it wasn't quite today, but they were learning that whole thing about, you know, do you remember when people used to talk about, oh, they're committing too many men in the breakdown on attack?
Canada
didn't do that. They were very cautious about the way they spread their forwards out and stuff. And obviously, it wasn't a 1-3-3-1 or whatever, but they were thinking along those lines and they were getting there.
This, to me, looked like a team who very deliberately thought about how do we get the most out of our players.
Because they knew the French pack fitted in them, and that's fine.
Yeah, but bigger and more powerful.
Exactly. But they managed to keep themselves in the fight for as long as possible. And as I say, like on the bench, there was a nice little distribution of players, sort of personnel picked in the pack. You got Darla, who was a very good sevens player. You got Tyler Hodgson, good line out forward. Hamilton, who's maybe a bit more dynamic than Reardon. It's a very good sort of spread of personnel to bring off the bench. It's a very good use of your pack. Even if they're not the most talented pack in the world, I think they were very well used by Crowley.
So just to go back to the point I'm making about kicking, because it's the thing you said about A, they're kicking for territory, and B, about point the statistics that we don't use anymore. There's a stat that comes up towards the end of the game of Ander Munro's kicking meters.
Okay.
And no one talks about kicking meters anymore because we've come to realise it's completely pointless. Yeah. Because, yes, maybe you kick 80 metres downfield, but generally speaking, it will be covered.
Yeah.
You know, like that just boot downfield is now the most useless kick because you put no pressure on anyone. Yeah. And the opposition has all the time in the world to either choose whether they return or if they've got time to counterattack and weigh up their own options.
Yeah.
All the kicks nowadays that happen are momentum built rather than possession or territory built.
Because you can boot the ball straight downfield, but you've got to have a very specific strategy in your chase, such as Warren Gatland's Wales keeping the ball in play at all times.
Exactly.
Backing their fitness and defence.
And the sheer height after Clerk were put in it for the Springboks. Yeah. And the fact it was always led on this kind of like two-phase chase. Yeah. The fact that you'd have a Mpimpi or a Colby or a Am or whoever would chase all out. And then just behind them, you'd always have the Mulan Khaleesi and, you know, the second rows, always just behind, waiting and wanting to cover in case they overshot or in case the ball bounced, in case they could just dislodge it and do that tap back.
What you've noticed with Dutoy is that he would almost linger behind and get ready to just join the line at full speed. So he could just straight away bring line speed and force a turnover if they've not got it on first phase. Which, again, this is a completely very specific strategy because Dutoy is a bit of an anomaly. And I know
he's a complete anomaly
France
to everyone.
Canada. But,
yeah.
In terms of that, as you say, like it's very specific the way you need to do it. And in fact, as well, Ed Fairhurst kicked very well as well. There's one specific point where off a scrum, he does a kick that goes about 50 yards end over end and bounces 5 yards out from French trial.
Yeah, it's the best kick you'll see all World Cup from his own half, 5 metres out from the opposition try line, you know, the line up 5 metres. And the whole time, Martin Gilling was chatting about cricket instead.
Didn't mention nothing at all today.
He didn't. No, but he did talk plenty about cricket. I wish I'd started that count as well, because he does a lot of that, just chatting about cricket and said, you know, fair enough. I don't mind, but when there's a phenomenal piece of skill happening in the rugby match you're being paid to commentate on, you know.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning.
Should we talk a bit more about...
On the kicking thing. Sorry, just that Kieran Crowley accidentally stumbled across what would be the big trend in kicking in, you know, 6-7 years time.
Yeah.
By looking at his pack going, they work incredibly hard. How can I get the most out of them?
Sure.
And how can I keep France from playing? Because France will try and play from their own 22. And France will try and just chuck the ball out from deep as they did a few times. And France had a habit of knocking it on or throwing forward passes or, you know, just losing the ball or trying a pointless little chip from their own heart. As we saw with Tranduc in the first half for the first try, for the Canadian try. They had a habit of just trying stupid things, this French team, because they're talented, so they try and use those talents.
And they've been back to do so,
Yeah, and so he built a strategy around that, and it accidentally was how kicking become the case. Yeah. Because you went, I've got a really fit team, I've got a really hard-working team, how do I get the most out of them and try and limit France and try and force them to play from deep? And he built this strategy around momentum. And it worked.
Yeah.
Like, it really worked for Canada for most of the game until he got tired and frustrated and Jamie Cudmore started diving off his feet and runs.
Yeah, precisely. I was going to say, do you want to talk a bit more about Ander Munro generally? Because
I would absolutely love to talk more about Ander Munro. Okay.
Because I'm just going to lay down my thoughts on Ander Munro's game. Because as a quick giveaway, he's somebody I have in contention for man of the match. And I have no idea whether or not he played brilliantly or was just pretty, like, ropey. I have no idea what he was. But he clearly, he was playing a different game to everybody else here.
Yeah.
He was seeing a completely different match to the other, you know, 29 players on the pitch.
He was playing a different sport.
Yeah, he was. He absolutely was. So it starts off that 11 minutes into the game, he misses a drop goal, which I'm not really sure why he went for, but, you know, it's fair enough. Like,
it's so well struck, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
It's I'll get onto this in a minute, my thoughts on his drop goals. I did as well, but he strikes it really well.
Yeah.
Without much time to
hit it.
Don't
get me wrong. Like, I get, you know, the score was, what, maybe 7-all, 7-10 at that point?
Yeah, 7-10.
Yeah, exactly. So, scoreline-wise, it makes sense. Positionally, it didn't make a lot of sense, but he gave it a pretty good go.
Oh, I thought it was over. He had plenty of room to go. And I like the fact that Canada went, and it's kind of tied into what I was saying about Kieran Crowley and accidentally working out this brilliant game. Well, not accidentally. He was a very good coach.
Yeah.
He deliberately found a good game plan, and it accidentally happened to be ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Ander Munro going for that drop goal is very reminiscent of Gatland's Wales in the last World Cup. Of, we're in this territory, we're going to take the points.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Which kind
of
did a lot
this
of
kind of... Yeah, and, you know, they only try they scored in this game, despite having a few chances far deeper within the French 22, was from a bullshit bouncing ball.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like them go the moment they get down there. And also, this French team, as we know, is mentally fragile. Yeah. And if you get 6 points ahead after, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah.
If that, that's a statement.
Yeah, it that's is. A statement. It definitely is. To just quickly stick on the stuff Munro did in the first half when I was still trying to get to grips with, like, because at this point I was convinced, like, I don't think he's playing well, but I think the stuff he's doing is working. But the first thing he does in the the whole game is that both teams make a bit of a half break within the first passage of play. And Munro then gets the ball and just passes it to nobody and just throws it onto the floor. And I'm thinking, okay, this isn't going to go well. And like, it's weird because at the same time, I completely agree with your point that his kicking strategy is somewhat ahead of 2011. But at the same time, yeah. I think a fly-half could not get away with playing like that these days.
No.
Like, it's so strange, but like, I do think he plays really well. And then he brings out what I've described in my notes as the most 80s kick in history about half an hour into the game. Do you know what I
mean?
Go on. He's stood on halfway, you know, midfield in line with the posts.
Yeah.
And it just boots the ball, and you think, okay, so that's going straight up in the air again. And it really, like, bananas round to Phil McKenzie on the left wing.
Yes! Yeah, I do know the kick you mean. Yeah.
And then it bounces into touch. France eventually get the throw in. But I just think, like, that's the... It's like he's just... He's in the change room beforehand. He's just watched a compilation of Jiffy playing for Wales and just gone, sure, I'll do that. And it nearly works.
I couldn't work out if that was a fluke or that was absolutely
not
incredible.
Not a clue.
Because he, and I went back and watched that again because I wanted to see if I could get any inclinations that where that's what it's going for.
Yeah.
Because if it was, it's brilliant. And the execution is phenomenal because there's no way France could predict it because it doesn't look like a cross kick. It just kind of completely, as you say, bananas round. It's like a Hernandez banana clearance, but instead he does it kind of laterally round to his winger. It's brilliant. It doesn't quite come off, sure, but you give, it's a couple of inches off maybe McKenzie regathering it. Also, right, briefly mention, Phil McKenzie, the sheer form he was in this World Cup.
Yeah, he was great, wasn't he?
His unwillingness to die with the ball in contact was brilliant. And he consistently made way more metres than they had any right to as a winger, hot, you know, being tagged by people several times his size.
And again, like I said this on the previous episode of the Tonga Canada match, but like he played against Fetu Vainikolo in that match as his opposite number, who is, and like, you know, he'd be the first to admit, Fetu Vainikolo is stronger and faster than him, and that's fine. But he dealt with him well and played better than him. There's a few times that Vainikolo, you know, got the better of him and managed to shrug him off and stuff, but he stayed in the fight the whole time. and managed to eventually pull him down, or at least slow him down. And that's really all you can do is win. And like Phil McKenzie, as you say, he was on excellent form. And like, he's not the sort of player you look at and think he has the sheer talent as, you know, like a Brian Habana or somebody like that.
Sure, but yeah. And I'm sure he did admit that himself as well.
Exactly, yeah. The way that he implies himself as a winger, he's just a brilliant, just international class winger.
Hmm.
And he played for South Sharks for a bit, didn't he? I believe that he went down
London
very
Welsh
well there.
As well,
Of course he did. Yeah, and he was very good for London Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was just a player who applied himself brilliantly. And he played in the centres as well, but I didn't see as much of him playing in there. But
he played, quite a bit of Canada in the centres as well. Yeah. By the next World Cup, he was playing a lot of centre.
Did he still make... Was he still there in the next World Cup?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, he's still... I think he's either still playing or just retired in the last year or so.
Oh, fair enough.
He's playing MLR, yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
But yeah, no, he was a good player. Ander Munro, however. So I have written down, in the second half, Ander Munro, more like Ander Hero. Because, I don't know if he made it clear, like, he's the Canadian 10. For some reason, when we're doing this podcast, I always assume that people know, like 65% of the squad for the Tier 2 players from 10 years ago. They don't, I get that. Yeah. Ander Munro is the Canadian 10, and he's a man who looked a bit like... He had a face like he was rendered in an N64 game.
Yeah. Called Ander Hero, which is an N64 game. Ander Hero.
Yes, yeah. He looked like his face was sort of just made of polygons. It was great. Yeah. By the way, I'm a huge fan of him.
Ander Hero is the second worst pun one of us has written down. Because, of course, I inevitably have written down Damian Try when he scores a try.
Yeah, I refuse to do that.
Yeah.
I absolutely refuse to write that.
Yeah. Carly Wren, what did you have written down?
Sorry. In my head, she was whispering into my ear like Sooty.
She's been very quiet so far, hasn't she?
Well, she said she would be. She doesn't know anything about rugby.
Oh, that's fair.
She's enjoying it, though. Look at her smiling. She's grinning away.
Yeah, she is.
She's having a great
time. She's happy. She's enjoying it. She played Under Hero on 64.
She loved it. She loved it. She wrote a full song about it.
Yeah, did she? How does that one
go? And a hero. That's it, it's really short. It's more like a jingle.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Carly Rae, for playing it.
Did you know her first album, Tug of War, was written about the first 35 minutes of this game?
Was it?
Yeah, it's a concept album about this game.
Okay, well, were there any tracks about, for example, a banana kick in there?
Sure.
The penalty count?
So, obviously, Tug of War reflects the game itself.
Sure.
But Heavy Lifting is very much about the scrum and the preparation for the scrummaging.
Sure.
Saw Candy is the last track on the album.
Okay.
And that is about the last 5 minutes in which Jamie Cudmore shows kind of sour candy.
Right, okay.
More like sour, yeah. And begins just giving penalties away.
Well done, Carly, right?
Yeah. Hotel Shampoos, very much just about the Canadian squad being in New Zealand.
Sure,
Stealing all the shampoo from the hotels.
And there was famously a point where the Canadians got into a huddle and started talking about the hotel shampoos instead of the last call.
Yeah. They just made a mistake. They just got carried away.
Yeah, exactly.
Lawrence Delalio took that as a thing to talk about Canadians for the next 10 years. Worldly Matters, of course, ties in with the travelling nature of a World Cup.
Sure.
Sunshine on My Shoulders was for a high tackle.
Probably by Cudmore.
Tell Me, again, line out calls. Yeah. Money in the Ego was DTH van der Merwe taking too much on himself because he plays for Glasgow.
Yeah, of course. And had blonde hair.
Yeah. And then the first song is about having a hole in a bucket, isn't it? Yeah, it's just called Bucket. I mean, this one was very much, absolutely, definitely the bucket's a metaphor for Francois Trandouk, who keeps just, holes keep popping up in his bucket. Yeah. And the bucket is his chance of being selected for the World Cup final when they get there.
Yep.
And the holes are all Morgan Parra.
Yeah.
Morgan exactly. Parra just being a twat and drilling holes in his bucket.
Yeah. Also, firstly, thank you for talking on behalf of Carly Rae about what her first album's about.
Sorry, I've just mansplained Carly Rae to her.
You have, yeah.
But she's going to write a song about that now.
Yeah, her next album is about the first 35 minutes of this podcast episode.
If she can do a side B for that, which is about the second.
Yeah, I hope so. In which we're going to talk some more about Ander Munro.
Mm.
Let's talk about the fact that, I mean, for the record, my notes for this game have so many question marks all over them. When Clare scores his try, there's loads there. When Smith then scores his try. When Munro misses that kick. And then when Munro gets his kick at the start of the second half, he gets a drop goal, which, you know, they didn't perfectly prepare for. But he just strikes it so well that it goes over. And you think, fair play, that's a beauty.
So, my favourite thing about Ander Munro is how aggressively he drives his drop goal attempts.
Yeah.
Because it looks like he's furious with the ball. Because he sort of, again, he doesn't take any time over it. It's passed to him as though he's going to normally do a little dink or he's going to, you know. I thought both times when he goes to the drop goals, he's hanging the ball up.
Yeah, me too. I could never tell which one he was going to go for.
No. And instead he just thunders a drop goal attempt towards the post and both times they go through.
He must have missed two kicks as well, didn't he? Drop goals. He certainly missed that one in the first half. I have a feeling he missed one in the second, didn't he?
No, he missed one and then he nailed two in the second half.
Right, okay.
The first one is great. The second one, he just sneaks over.
Yeah. Should we talk about the second one? Because what the hell happens there?
Because he's caught sort of in the corner, off balance, basically. And he really aggressively hits the drop goal.
So what happens in the second one is, you know, for any young kids playing, I mean, why would you be listening to this podcast? But for any young kids, you're always taught if the ball's bobbling around on the floor.
Well, they listen to the podcast because their favourite pop star's on it.
That's fair. Dragging in a load of listeners. When the ball's bobbling around on the floor, the first thing you do is you dive on it, don't you? You know,
sure.
You don't, you know, put your foot on it. You don't try and scoop it up one handed like Brian O'Driscoll. The most sensible thing to do is to just dive on it. Ander Munro took this and instead thought, no, I'm just going to score a drop goal instead. But literally, it's what he does. The ball is bobbing around on the floor. There's one French player trying to dive on it, and there's one Canadian player trying to, like, rake it back with his foot, or it might be the other way around, I can't remember. Ander Munro just puts both hands on the ball, holds it really low, and just drop kicks it. And you think, like, what's he doing? Like, why would he do that? He's just kind of messing about, you know, going for a drop goal when he's had no time to prepare for it. It's basically from the floor like he's taking a place kick. He's not had any time to swing his leg back because the ball's so low to the ground. And it's, hang on a second, he's scored.
And both times, with Canada having fallen 9 points behind at half time, those kicks put them back within seven.
Yeah.
He nails one to put them back within seven. And then also, Francois Trandouk then nails a drop goal not long after his second, which feels like a weird option, considering France was sort of going forward and working with it. But I love drop goals, so who cares? Yeah. But yeah, I think drop goals are massively underused. I am amazed more coaches don't build game plans around drop goals.
Yeah, of course.
It amazes me that it's been genuinely about a decade since we last saw a major team whose entire strategy was drop goal-based.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't happen. No. And I don't know why, because they're such a cheap 3 points.
They are.
And
at that point, Canada literally drop the ball and profit 3 points from it.
Yeah,
that's how cheap a 3 points it is. That they've done nothing to deserve that.
It takes an incredible moment of skill. It does. You can't say they don't deserve it because
skill now.
They still had to get it same as anything else. Exactly. Exactly. Good old skill now. Yeah, I love Ander Munro. He has become my favourite player because he is just a drop goal addict and he needs them pumped into his veins very regularly as well.
Yeah.
And it's nice to just see yourself reflected on screen, you know. It's nice to see such a relatable story as someone who's just addicted to drop goals.
Yeah.
And he probably got a real kick out of, no pun intended, out of Francois Trandouk as well.
I was going to say. So Trandouk was actually pretty well set. I was actually very surprised they actually went for it because it's weird because often I think when you're the tier one team and you're taking the drop goal, people almost look at it like you're admitting defeat at that point. And you're saying, like, fine, we need to take these 3 points to actually beat this so-called lesser team, in inverted commas.
Yeah. And it's not like, you sometimes see people say, you know, when they kick a penalty, it's like, oh, it's a mark of respect for the tier two nation.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's like a, ah, oh, they're shit the bed, haven't they? They're going for a drop goal.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's like, well, they know they need 3 points desperately to try and get ahead. Yeah. And at this point, bear in mind, France only had, you know, the one try on the board. So yeah. It's not like, you know, sometimes if you've got three tries, there's a bit of daylight between you. You can take the extra 3 points just to build momentum, sort of thing.
Yeah.
No, they needed that 3 points because that took it to 25-16. Then Canada scored a penalty to get back within seven again.
And Canada were properly putting pressure on them. You
yeah.
know? Like they looked like scoring points, even if not a try, whenever they got downfield, thanks to Munro twice in a row nailing drop goals and going for that other one as well, which looked like it was going over. You know, it was probably narrowly quite wide. We didn't see it. View from behind the post or straight in front, but I felt like it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Then France, from 60 minutes or so onwards, start to get a few more attacks and manage to go wide a bit. As you say, Memoz and Marty both had very good games, and both when they had time on the ball were just very capable of breaking the line. And there was a point about 60 minutes where Canada just looked very tired, but managed to hold France out on their own try line. And I think it was O'Toole or maybe Kleeberger managed to get the turnover. And
And
it's just, you don't often see it. You know, it would be so easy for them to just roll over. And I know that you don't want to do that because it's international rugby or whatever. But from how
when
tired
you're
they
that
were,
knackered, yeah, and you're facing a team
you almost
and more
forgive
skillful
yourself
and better prepared, than
thinking
you.
You're working hard enough when you could work that little bit harder. But no, they managed to step it up another gear.
Isn't
which
it's
is
a
so
great turnover by O'Toole.
Yeah, O'Toole.
Who,
okay,
because he became a joke and he had such a bad time at the Ospreys, you know, he's played three games. Infamously was held up over the try line at what should have been a walk-in against Treviso on his debut. And because he kind of shat the bed when given the chance at pro level, people forget how good he was for Canada.
Yeah.
And for about 2 years, he was on good form, one of their real stand-up players. And then he remained a solid enough player for a year or so after that as well, before he kind of packed it in. But he was a good player. He was a good seven and a proper like breakdown specialist.
And once
competitor.
He'd worked himself, you know, he'd tied himself out. Then bringing on Nanyak Dala, who I said earlier, you know, very good sevens player.
He
worked
also,
very well when he came on.
They also, at about 50 minutes, Shepherd's caught Jamie Cudmore because he was giving away too many penalties.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think is a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, he's, you kind of need him in the team for edge and grunt and whatever, but
and
I feel like the job's kind of been done.
Most experienced player.
He is. It's him and DT van der Merwe are the two players who are consistently playing European standard rugby.
But as I say, Tyler Hodgson, good lineup forward, you know?
Exactly.
You can't really go wrong bringing him on.
And by that point, the job you want Jamie Cudmore doing, which is being an enforcer and a grunt and, you know, and letting the French team know that they're no mugs, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he got really in their face. He gave away penalties, but that French team felt like they were in a game.
Yeah.
You know? And he got that message across. He did what he had to do. And then they brought him off at 50 minutes, knowing he can't do any more damage by giving away stupid penalties.
Yeah.
So it was a, frankly, great decision to, obviously you start him because he's, you know, one of your best players. But regardless, it's a bit of management to go, we're going to put this guy in so that the French get the message that we're a serious team.
Yeah.
And then we're going to replace him before he begins to tire. And, you know, the whole thing Erasmus talked about a lot, that you make worse decisions when your, you know, the brain's lacking energy and so on. And in Jamie Cudmore's case, that means he's just going to actually punch someone.
Yeah.
And I genuinely can see a different version of this game where he plays another 5 minutes and gets a red card and the game falls apart.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I can see that every game Jamie Cudmore ever plays. I can see him getting a red card at any moment.
I think they did use the bench very well, Canada, actually. There's Sean White managed to inject a bit of pace playing scrum half.
Yes, he did.
He did. He did have that one grubber kick which went completely backwards. But
I like that as an option.
I like
that because it was face in. And it was
if he managed to actually get it into the corner.
And,
but
I mean, considering he is possibly the best known snowboarder of all time.
Of course.
You're expecting him to do better.
Yeah, yeah. And
there was even a video game.
The fact that he's been parachuted into this team of ice hockey players to snowboard instead. You know, it's difficult.
I don't know why Lawrence Lelly wasn't talking about that. He wasn't going, well, they've got a really, really talented Winter Olympian on the bench.
Sure.
But, you know, much as Heather, I've forgotten her surname, who played for the Canada women's team for years, who was an Olympic winter gold medalist.
I'm not sure.
No, but she was great. She was a very good back three player. And also, you know, won gold in the Winter Olympics. Heather Moyes?
Anyway.
Yeah, but Sean White, I should clarify, it isn't that Sean White. Because I've realised, as I say, people listening to this podcast forget that Canada had a scrum half on the bench who shared the name with the possibly the most famous snowboarder of all time, who was active at the same time. People would believe that actually a snowboarder came across and played a couple of games off the bench for Canada.
Yeah, I think they probably would, wouldn't they?
Like, I feel like sometimes we've got to clarify these a bit.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, at one point in my notes I wrote Phil Mack instead of Phil McKenzie as an abbreviation and realised actually Canada would go on to have a player called Phil Mack for years.
Yeah, yeah. Should we now move on to Damian's try?
Please, please do.
So, it's quite a frustrating try to watch because, as I say, like, Canada have risen above their tiredness at this point.
Yeah.
And France managed to work an overlap and find try with Claire outside him. Try dummies and cuts inside. And so, then breaks two tackles, which you can't blame the winger for drifting off is the annoying thing.
Straight before, Aurelien Rougerie hits a really nice line, taking the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And managed to get kind of onto the outside arm. Outside shoulder of the last Canadian defender, which puts try through. And it was the moment I realised Aurelien Rougerie was playing.
Yeah, he did play well when he did get the ball, but he was just...
I genuinely hadn't noticed him until about there, or maybe like 2 minutes earlier.
He had a couple of moments where he made half breaks in the first half, but
Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention.
I think he was frustrated by being on the wing,
I agree. Second half, he started getting far more involved and bringing himself... I don't know if they moved him into the centre, but he started appearing in midfield a lot.
I think he stayed on the wing the whole game, but until he got brought off, obviously.
Until he got, for Maida.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he hits a really nice line and puts on to try. They've got Claire outside him, and the fullback and the winger both make the same decision and drift onto Claire.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it just needed communication or if it was just a simple error, because it looks quite easy, and you've got far side winger tracking across and try steps him in that way. It's very easy to do when someone's moving with that momentum in one direction. Yeah. It's quite hard for them to readjust and quite easy to beat and to step them.
Yeah.
And he runs it in from distance, which is a shame, but you kind of needed someone. Try was notorious for being the most sensible player in that French team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they probably needed him to be the guy to step up. It was him or Parra, really, wasn't it? As the without Doucetoir.
Then should we just look at the other French tries while we're here?
Sure, yeah.
So Vance van Cleer scores his second try once Yashvili's come on.
I love the finish of that.
Yeah.
I love the finish.
Yeah.
So it's a scrum five.
Yeah.
And, or scrum near the line anyway, it's about scrum five.
Yeah. It's five.
And yeah, they throw this long looping pass and Claire has started from about the 22-metre line and gives himself all the time in the world to sprint onto it. So by the time he takes the ball, 7 or 8 yards out from the line, he is at absolutely full pelt and he's able to pick where he's diving, pick his line, and finish the try.
It's exactly what you
and
want from your winger.
Nothing, there's nothing, despite the fact that he was, Phil McKenzie was probably a bigger lad than him.
Yeah.
There was nothing he could have done to stop it.
It's what Van Zylkler is so good for, because he was fast, he was strong, but you wouldn't call him, again, a Brian Abana or a Jonah Lomu, would you? He was just so well balanced, and he did all of these little things that eventually adds up to the 1% of finishing tries.
Well,
he did all those things so well.
His finishing instinct was the best thing about
phenomenal.
Him.
Phenomenal. And he was one of the best finishers in the last 20 years,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he's top try scorer in basically every competition he's ever played in.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
Or at least, is top three in all of them.
Yeah.
He's top in the Pro 14. Top in the top 14. I think he's second in Europe. I think he's then top of France. It's just, he was a top try scorer in this World Cup, joint with Chris Ashton, who's the only man ahead of him in Europe. Yeah, he's just consistently brilliant.
Yeah.
Because all he knew how to do was to finish tries.
And Yashvili read his line brilliantly by putting that pass in for him. And there's so much trust there from the scrum half for the winger to run onto that ball and finish the try and read it perfectly.
Yeah.
I know that it's such a standard thing for a 3-on-2. And that was basically just what the try was. It was just a standard 3-on-2 finish. But Yashvili, the way he weights that ball is so spot on. And say Yashvili's barely been on at this point,
Yeah.
Yashvili was great off the bench, I'll add.
He was.
Yeah,
he was. He doesn't change the game as such, but he just makes France look like a serious team.
Yeah.
And before that, Parra's a very good player, and I like Parra.
Parra had a very good game, I think. He did make a few errors, but I do think he had a good game. But then he moved to 10, and he looked slightly lost. I wonder what that was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Yashvili really, really made up for that. And France kicked off 9 a lot in this game, regardless of who they had. But I think when Parra moved to 10, as I say, like, it wasn't quite working out for him, but Yashvili really managed to take the pressure off and just complete. And there was somewhat interchangeable as well. There were a couple of times where Parra stepped out at 9 and Yashvili at 10.
I noticed that.
And that worked quite nicely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love an interchangeable 9-10 axis.
Oh, you Frenchman. Then should we move on to Van Tonkler's last try?
Sure.
Which is in the last minute. So that try was on 78 minutes 20 or something. Yashvili then nails the conversion from the corner.
Yeah.
And there's just about time for the restart, and France go into full batshit mode.
Yeah.
But so, good batshit, like proper batshit, like French fleur.
France finally managed to capitalise on quite tired Canadian D. So Maxime Mars makes a break and does a really lovely offload to Harry Nordicke, who managed to get up. And fair play, I think it's James Pritchard gets back and makes the tackle on Harry Nordicke, which can't have been easy at that point. And again, it was just, they just had too many numbers over. I'm not sure who was it. Was it Try gave the pass back inside to Clare? Or
I think it's Try. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Try. Yeah, and it's just lots of nice passing.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's a French team linking up properly.
It's cruel.
In the way you'd expect them to. And in the way, frankly, they did in that last 10 minutes against Japan as well, where they really went with ran away with the game.
Absolutely.
In this World Cup, that was.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they just went, no, we're just going to flick a switch now, and they're instantly brilliant. They just kind of flick into being, oh, blah, 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 there's my noise for offloading.
Isn't it mad how they scored 46 points and only got the bonus point in the 83rd minute or whatever it was?
I know. They scored 46 points and they looked shite.
Yeah, I know. And like, well, it's funny because they weren't that dreadful, but they just didn't look like world beaters, did they? They didn't look like they would, you know, maybe go to the final. They looked like they could hypothetically, you know, lose to another
team.
They
looked like a quarterfinal team. I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, it's very difficult to gauge where either of these teams were at, to be honest, because Canada did play well. I'm not sure I'd go as far as saying they were the better team, but...
No. And I think this is a better French team than the one that started against Tonga.
Yeah, it is, undoubtedly. Yeah.
Yeah. Despite, so like, this very easily could have been the upset.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a world in which this is the game. If they'd rested a couple more players, I think this is the game that they lose.
Yeah, agreed.
And I can see them. I could have seen them losing this game.
And
from
to be
the
honest,
way it panned out.
There's just a couple of positions where it's like they can rest people and they just have too much depth to lose a game. You know, like in the back row, the fact they brought on Phil Jones-Rodrigo and, like, he's a good player to have in. You know, Aaron Audie on the bench, Picamol as another player they're bringing on. Like, they've just got too much depth there. Whatever scrum off you pick, as long as it's not Doosan, you're fine, you know? You're sorted.
Yeah.
So,
but they won't pick Doosan. You know, he won't play at all.
Well, they've got
he's definitely not in the final.
They've got time. They've got time to blood him, man.
Exactly. They've got loads of games before
the final. Must have, as well, he must have had a time in the warm-up games to play.
No, because he didn't. Because that was the thing. They didn't, for some reason. He sat on the bench and didn't come on. Yeah. So...
Oh, France.
But surely that's just going to be the way. They're just going to, you know...
Yeah, they're not going to. It's fine. They've got loads of
time. They're not going to. It's
loads of time.
Yeah. There's no rush. There's no rush.
No.
For the World Cup final. Do you want my metaphor for this game?
Sure.
Bear in mind, my last metaphor for France against a Tier 2 nation was 20 minutes on Uncle Boomy, who can call his past lives.
Oh, God. Okay.
Instead, Van Tonkler provided the perfect metaphor for this match.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, in the first minute of the game, right, France begin to spread it wide. They get it to Van Tonkler. He beats his man. He steps back inside. He then realises there's loads of other defenders in his way, so he begins to run sideways. He loses 5 metres, then he falls over.
Then he scores a hat-trick.
Yeah, then he scores a hat-trick, yeah. But that felt like the game, you know, he beats a defender, they've made some yards, but then he goes backwards and falls over. That's about France. That's about France in this World Cup.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing I'll say before, I presume we're going to move on to a closing segment in a bit. Last thing I want to say, there is a point, about 50 minutes, where the cameras show somebody in the crowd is holding up a banner that says, "Save a beaver, eat a frog."
Okay. Is that Stephen Donald advice?
Yeah, the first thing I thought of was like, this is foreshadowing that Stephen Donald will get called up from white baiting somewhere.
You gotta and save beat that the French.
And beat the French. And eat the
and
frog.
Beat the French. Eat the frog. Exactly. There's a guy it cuts to on full time after that last French try, or after the conversion's just gone over. There's a guy in the crowd who's just holding a massive inflatable frog and looking sad. I was like, that's great. That's my new favourite French rugby image. And it's probably like it's bigger than his head, this inflatable frog. And he's just sort of holding it like in a normal t-shirt, just kind of looking confused and upset.
Ah,
However, he is not my man of the match. He is not my dick of the day. We shall instead move on to that. I want to begin by asking Carly Rae Jepsen, do you have any nominations for... Should we start with man of the match? Let's start with man of the match.
Sure. Carly Rae?
Oh, that's really interesting. Oh, okay.
I think her mic's turned off. I didn't hear what she said. What was it? Just reiterate it for me, please, Robbie.
Okay, now do you want to say it again, Carly? Did you get it that time?
No.
Okay. One last time, and you'll definitely hear it this time. Okay. Because she's not doing it. She's not doing it full time. Okay? I think that's a really interesting shout, to be honest. I wouldn't have said it myself, but I think it's really quite interesting.
Okay.
So, what about you? What about your man of the match?
My man of the match, I mean, as I say, Ander Monroe is certainly up there. I have no idea if he played well, but he's definitely in man of the match contention. Claire scoring 3 tries, Picamore was the official man of the match.
Again, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, but I'm just going to give it to, for the sake of when Canada were getting into the game, the most consistent player for France, mostly at set piece and also breakdown, Julien Bonnaire.
Okay. Yeah.
I just think he just generally is just not really a player who ever does much wrong. And he's just really crucial to the backbone of a side who makes sure that they actually pull through and win games like this. I'm aware that he did play in the later game, which they lose. But no, I just think it was great. He was just quietly very good at everything he did. And I think I maybe decided about 20 minutes into the game, I just have a feeling Bonnaire's going to be man of the match. And he just very gradually proved me right, even if he had a period of 10 minutes or 20 minutes where he went missing in the middle. But yeah, I'll go with Bonnaire. Yeah.
As you say that, I suddenly realise it probably is Julien Bonnaire. Mm. And I might have to give it to him now. I think you're probably spot on.
Yeah. Who else have you thought of?
I had Vincent Clair highly in contention.
Fair. Yeah.
For being consistently sniffing around. Also, for the moment, he goes over the advertising hoardings.
Of course.
James Pritchard kind of nudges him over as they're basically both chasing blows his him. Ball. Yeah, and he knocks Vincent Clair over the advertising hoardings. And I had one of those moments where, when the ball goes out, right? And you kind of look down and pick up your phone.
Yeah.
And I kind of did that, and I looked back up and was like, hold on, they just knocked Vincent Clair over the advertising hoardings. At which point, Vincent Clair's head kind of pops up. Like, from behind the advertising hoardings, he looks both directions in this really innocent, cartoony way.
like a Diglett.
Exactly, yeah, popping out the ground. It was just a great moment of physical comedy.
You say he was flipped over the advertising hoardings. He jumped over the advertising hoardings.
Sure, he was knocked off balance and then he jumps over and kind of falls.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Canada are penalised for it.
Yeah, which is a shame, but...
It's before the TMO can step in and go, no, they're just being dicks, play on.
Yeah.
However, yeah, my other guy in contention, and the other guy I was going to give it to, but I think I am now going to say Julien Bonnaire, Ander Monroe.
Fair.
Because he is my new hero. And I know I gave him man of the match last time for the most aggressive, pointlessly aggressive performance by a fly half ever.
Yeah.
But I loved him. I love the way he played. I thought the thing that kept Canada in the game was their kicking game. So him and Fairhurst deserve a huge amount of credit. And Pritchard as well. Huge amount of credit for that. He then hits 2 drop goals and goes for a third. And anyone deserves attention in my book if you try that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, you know what? No, Ander Monroe. I'm going to go Ander Monroe.
Okay. Now we're going to go to our 18 lawyers and ask what each of their man of the matches were.
They're not allowed to say dick of the day for legal reasons.
Yeah.
They're not censored. Allowed to clarify that.
No. Yeah, let's go dick of the day then. So, do you want to start or should I?
Sure. So, I have 2 real contenders. One of them I just mentioned in man of the match contention, which is Vincent Clair. Because at one point, Ander Monroe, funny enough, hangs this really good high ball into the French 22.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 2 Canadians chasing him, just Vincent Clair is directly positioned underneath it. And normally... Do you know what you'd expect a player to do in that situation?
Maybe catch the ball?
Yeah, you'd at least try and catch the ball.
Sure.
Vincent Clair, instead, kind of just like, you know that thing, right, when like a kid is learning to kick the ball and their dad will pretend to be goalposts and like hold their arms up, like at, you know, angles so that, yeah, acting like the goalposts. Vincent Clair does that. And he kind of just holds his arms up and the ball just ricochets off his shoulder into touch.
I missed that.
So you could have tried.
Yeah.
Similarly, as well, Ed Fairhurst at one point James Pitcher goes to take a high ball, and he does a proper jump to claim it, you know, tucks it into his chest.
Yeah.
And at first, it's like 7 or 8 meters away, and he does exactly the same thing, but he doesn't catch the ball. He just jumps, brings it into his chest, and realizes he hasn't got the ball, and it's over there with his teammate.
You start running with it.
Yeah. Is that William Webb Ellis? Yeah.
Yeah.
He just picks it up and runs with it.
Exactly.
However, the moment for me that I felt was the moment it happened, I wrote down what happened and Dick of the Day.
Yeah.
And I figured...
I have a feeling, because I've done the exact same thing with my nominations.
So okay, do you want to go with yours?
I'll read out the one that's not getting it first, and then you can do yours. We'll alternate like that. So there's a point where Morgan Parra...
Yes, this is it.
Yeah. Has the ball at the base of a ruck, and then just picks the ball up to pass it to somebody who's running on like a short line to him. And he just throws it over their head like he's Brian O'Driscoll doing the you know, the overhead pass with Shane Horgan, like he's doing that, and then goes and collects it at the other side. But obviously he's been swarmed by Canadian defenders.
But he doesn't do it deliberately.
No, of course
he
not.
He accidentally lobs it over the guy's
rubbish
head.
Pass. Yeah.
You made it sound like, yeah, he chucks it over the forward's head, runs round and dives on it to regather it.
Yeah. And just
like
loses 5 yards.
Like he accidentally passes to himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably shit. And I had that written down as automatic Dick of the Day the moment I saw it.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote that down and just wrote DOD. For the sake of being different, I've got another one, which was about 68 minutes or so into the game. Canada have a scrum about 10 yards out from the French goal line. At this point, France have that safety blanket of the Damien try.
Mm.
And Carpenter picks and goes from the back of the scrum and makes quite a lot of ground. Do you know why he makes quite a lot of ground?
Go on.
Carry. Francois Trandouk, playing 10, looks at him and then just kind of goes, nah, and just drifts off when he's running into him. And honestly, like, if he just stood his ground, he would be able to knock Carpenter over. But he just decides he just can't be asked to make the tackle. So he just runs away.
It's incredible. Because 2010, 2011 was pretty much the best period of Trandouk's career.
Yeah.
Like, he went on to play for France a lot, and he got recalled every few years, and they bring him in and so on. But this was the period in which he was their number one fly half by a distance.
Yeah.
And the amount of just utterly shit things he'd pack into there...
It was easy to miss at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like, he was one of the top 5 tens in the world, probably, at the time.
Definitely.
And yet he would occasionally just do unbelievably shite things.
Yeah.
And like, where did that come from? Why do I have no recollection of any of these things?
And like,
because overall, he was well known for being great.
At that point, yeah, Parra and I think it's Aaron Alderke have gotten back to make a tackle from behind on Carpenter. And just kind of look at Trandouk like, thanks a lot for that.
Yeah.
He's just stepped out of the way. And just
well done, mate.
Yeah, I'll think about the next phase. And then this guy's literally inches away from me. And he just pisses off. So
that's deserved. That's deserved. Okay, I think it's a halfback combination.
Yeah, Parra
as your
Trandouk.
Yeah, Van Sonclair's very lucky to get away with this though.
Yeah,
for falling over under no pressure, for not trying to catch the ball. However, he got 3 tries. I felt it'd be harsh when Parra does something very dickish.
Sure.
Okay,
is that's done?
Pretty much.
I have one more thing that I'd like to talk about before we conclude the podcast.
Okay.
The other day, I was reading through some reviews that we've had on the podcast. And there's one in particular that stood out. And I might do this as like a staggered feature that we do every now and then.
Right.
Is read one of these out. But one of them really, really took my attention. I really enjoyed it. So this submission on the reviews section.
Have you cleared this for the lawyers?
No, but
oh,
it's fine.
We might have to cut it.
Yeah, no, I'll see if Phil Monosopolo gets on my case. But if we get away with it, we'll be fine. But this submission comes from Apple Podcast Review from A. Jacob Holt. And he said, this is my favourite podcast to kayak to. Love to listen to this film podcast. I go up and down the local waterways in my kayak. The occasional ropey content is also fine. 5 stars.
Good. So, frankly... I don't think there's been enough film content on this.
No, yeah.
It's been quite rugby heavy, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a few... Funnily enough, down towards like the bottom of the review section, there's a few that say, oh yeah, I really like Squidge's analysis. I think he really understands rugby. Very, very funny. But it's just like, yeah, you're giving 5 stars now. You don't know what you're letting yourself in for here. But no, thank you to Jacob for leaving that review.
Yeah, thank
and
you, Jacob.
Anybody else who has done, I might read some more out as I go along. But it's heartily encouraged that you leave a review. And Jacob, You get it, my friend. You get it.
It's also half the encouraged that you listen whilst kayaking.
Yes, that too.
Frankly, I think too many of our listeners don't listen whilst doing extreme water sports.
Yeah, agreed. So if you do it on while doing extreme water sports, or you know, however else you do it, wherever you're listening to this.
Any extreme sport. You know, I believe Sean White himself listens to us.
Yeah, he does.
While snowboarding.
Yeah.
And occasionally filling in at Scrum Off for Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, there are some other brilliant reviews on there, which I might read out at some point as we go along.
Okay.
But that one, I thought, warranted reading out, because I saw that the other day and I enjoyed that. So, yeah, please leave reviews and tell every single person you've ever met in your entire life about this podcast.
Can you imagine people just tracking down their old school teachers? Just saying, you know what? I really think you'd love this explanation of the Thai film Uncle Boo Me, who recall his past lives.
Yeah, I think everybody should do that whilst doing extreme sports.
I completely agree with that, and I think that's a good note on which to call it a day.
Yeah.
Join us again next time.
Psst.
When the game... What?
It's Italy against Russia.
I know. I knew that.
Just thought I'd let you know.
No, thank you. Yeah, great. And now we're going to... When the game will be Italy against Russia.
Oh, nice.
Please join us for some rugby chat. There will be at least 4 rugbys played in that game.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it back yet, but my main memory was Tommaso Benvenuti going apeshit. Cool. So please join us for that next time. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy The Wall.
By Pink Floyd.
Album. Yeah, sure.
Good album.
Yeah. I hope you're having a great time.
That was a hot take there.
It was, actually. Yeah. Fair play.
The Wall by Pink Floyd is a good album.
Yeah. Another brick in.
More like another prick being you.
I don't know why I said enjoy The Wall.
Me neither. Why did you say enjoy The Wall?
I want to say like something different, and so I thought, what can you possibly enjoy?
Were you trying to say war?
I can explain it, but I'll explain it afterwards because I don't want to spoil anything for listeners. But it wasn't just I looked at my wall. I hope you're all having nice days. I hope at least 4 of you have eaten, and
I hope so.
Just in your life, you know. And I hope most of you track down your school teachers.
Yeah,
and we'll see you next time when Italy will play
Russia.
Rugby.
Bye.
Did you?
Yeah, bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.